Welcome back to the Fretboard Journal's podcast. This is Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal. That is John Rauhouse playing in the background. You may have noticed I took a week off last week. I was down at the NAMM show in Anaheim. I optimistically thought I'd be able to knock out a podcast interview or two and find a quiet space. And though I could have easily interviewed dozens of people down there, there were no quiet spaces. I don't know what I was thinking. I did have a good time. I wrote about my thoughts, my little recap of the NAMM show on fretboardjournal.com. That is live now. Some great guitars, nothing too groundbreaking, but some great guitars from some of our favorite makers. Obviously great stuff from Collings and Waterloo and Martin and Taylor, as well as some amazing stuff from Saul Cole. I love the stuff Satellite Amplifiers is doing. They have reissued the Epiphone Coronet, which I thought was just amazing. There were a ton of great guitars. I also met a few of you podcast listeners, which was a lot of fun. Folks stopped me in the hall and said, "I know that voice." And we had some quick conversations, and that was all a lot of fun. I also talked to a couple of folks who may be joining our fold soon in terms of the podcast family. We're going to be expanding and having some new shows besides this show, some stuff that has kind of a unique focus. And so stay tuned. I'll be announcing those the minute they go live. But in the next few months, you might be getting some new podcast to subscribe to, which I'm very excited about. I'm sure some of you are sick of my voice, so this will be much welcome news. In the meantime, I hope you will go on to iTunes and leave us a review if you haven't yet. It lets us grow, it helps with our search rankings, and it obviously helps out with our sponsors and what else we can do with this podcast. So it takes about 5 seconds of your time. Just go onto the iTunes interface and leave us a review. It takes literally 5 seconds. On today's podcast, I am talking to William Cedars Mosheim. He is the guy behind Cedars Instruments in Vermont. He is making some incredibly cool open back banjos. I don't know what it is about the world of open back banjos, but the customer base seems to be really responsive to new and interesting builders who are both building traditional stuff as well as some kind of forward-thinking stuff. So for all of you guys out there who have struggled to sell a Dreadnought because it didn't have a Martin name on the headstock, or a Telecaster because it didn't have Fender on the headstock, consider the universe of open back banjos. It's a much more free-thinking society, apparently. Speaking of banjos, our sponsors, T.R. Crandall, have some. I just did a quick search. Very cool 1920s Bruno Tempo Grand No. 2 is for sale. That's a tenor. But they also have a few banjos, kind of like the Cedars Instruments, that are made by the Pisgah Banjo Company in North Carolina. Theirs are based on the Dobson tone rings. This whole tone ring world is a whole nother universe. I look forward to diving into it a little bit more with both Will as well as some other open back banjo makers. But anyways, T.R. Crandall is our sponsor. Go check out their stuff. Obviously, their bread and butter is selling amazing vintage acoustic and electric guitars, but they do have quite a selection of banjos and mandolins as well. T-R-C-R-A-N-D-A-L-L.com. Tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. Without further ado, I'm going to cut to our conversation with Will from Cedar Instruments. I should add, Will was actually in Seattle on a little mini self-imposed sabbatical while he worked on his brand new website, and that website is now live, and that's cedarsinstruments.com. Go check out what he's up to. And here's our conversation. Thanks so much, everybody. Hey, Will, welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, walk me through your, how did you stumble upon banjos?
Well, it was kind of a long evolution, honestly. It was, it all started with me playing music when I was 11 years old and growing up in my father's wood shop. My father, Dan Mosheim, makes custom handmade furniture.
Okay.
Everything from kitchen cabinets, dining room tables, chairs, pool tables, kind of any, you name it. You know, his portfolio is all over the map. And I worked for him for years in the shop, kind of always toying around in the back of my mind, hey, maybe I'll make instruments. Because I always played instruments and worked with wood. And about 7 years ago or so, I put those two loves together, and my father and I put our heads together, and we built the first banjo that I made. And shortly after, I built a second one. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, a good friend of mine came to me and said, I want to commission you to build my 4-year-old son a banjo.
Wow.
And it all just kind of snowballed from there.
And why the banjo? Were you a banjo guy?
I started out as a bass player when I was 11, 12, bass and guitar. Played that to my mid-20s. And then I was playing, at the time, I was playing a lot of punk rock and heavy metal and loud, angry music.
Sure.
And I got tired of putting in earplugs. Every time I played, tired of lugging around big amps and equipment. And just kind of tired of that, all the connotations that come around that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And I started picking up my acoustic guitar again and gravitating back towards folk, which I grew up around folk and early country and bluegrass. And at the time, my good friend who was the bass player in the band, his wife had a banjo sitting there in the corner, and I borrowed it and just kind of fell in love with the instrument and just took off from there.
Was that an open back or a resonator?
It was a really cheap Chinese Dean that I took the resonator off and modified and made it as best as I could.
Okay.
And played that for a year or so. And how I started making them was I started looking around at nicer banjos. And from what I saw, there was a lot of great banjos out there, but they were all a little pricier than I was looking for. And that's when I started thinking, hey, I can build this. I can put my mind to this and really figure this out.
Yeah.
So
were those first ones you bought pre-made rims and everything and did all that, or what'd you do?
No, I went for it.
You did?
The only thing I bought was the hardware from Stumac.
Okay.
And so we made rims. We made block style rims, so segmented rims instead of steam bent rims,
okay,
which the majority of them are. And a lot of amateur builders start out building block style rims.
Okay.
So it's pieces of a circle glued together, and then you stack them up and turn them around.
Okay.
And so I started out, made my own first necks, fretted everything. I really didn't really pre-buy anything but the parts needed.
Okay. Use your dad's equipment? Or
yep.
You had,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And how many banjos are you up to now?
I'm about to finish number 49, so number 50 is coming real soon.
Okay. And they've all been open back?
Yep, all been open back. And I do some conversions. So take an old 4-string banjo, make it into a 5-string, or take an old rim somebody will send me, put a new neck on it. And I've done a few Gibson conversions. So bluegrass, full resonator style banjos.
Oh,
but
okay.
I haven't built the whole rim assembly and resonator.
Are you going to?
I don't have a huge desire to. Yeah. I probably will eventually. And I've had a few requests to do kind of early Gibson, like the trapdoor model style resonators, flatback resonators.
Yeah.
I'd like to eventually, but most of my work is coming from the open back banjo world.
Yeah.
So
you got 49. So how many a year do you crank out?
It depends on the year. I also do a lot of restoration and repair work on early banjos, late 19th century, early 20th century banjos. So that takes up some of my time, and I also build a handful of guitars here and there.
Okay. Flat tops?
Yep, flat tops. And this last year, I built a Delvecchio reproduction.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that was a pretty wild project.
Yeah.
And for that, I kind of went the same way as I went the early banjo route. I didn't buy any of the pieces. I bought a spinning lathe and figured out how to spin my own parts.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So that was quite a challenge.
Was that a commission or just a challenge?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a commission from a good friend of mine, an old friend of mine I played a lot of music with over the years.
Okay.
And he had an old Delvecchio that he played as his daily player, and it was just kind of a little worse for the wear, as a lot of those go.
Yeah.
And we kind of spun it and redesigned it and made it handle modern steel strings and, made it into a real player.
Nice. So where, for folks who are listening who maybe aren't well-versed on the state of open-back banjo makers, like we did that video with Jason and Ferris Romero, and everybody knows them and loves them, and they have some crazy ordering system because they're so back-ordered, I think. And they're going to be on another podcast coming up.
Nice.
And then there's just like Kevin Enoch. Like, where do you fit in? Like, what's your style? What are you kind of known for?
Well, it's interesting you bring those two up because both Kevin and Jason and Ferris are huge influences of me and have been since day one.
Yeah.
And as well as Greg Galbraith of Buckeye Banjos.
Okay.
And Pete Ross, who works for Kevin, who does the beautiful early Gord banjos.
Yeah.
And as well as a few others. Those are the big influences I've had. And I was fortunate enough to meet Kevin and Greg years ago, and they kind of helped guide me in the right direction, as well as a few others. Bob Smakula and Andy Fitzgibbon, who are big vintage restorer guys in West Virginia.
Okay.
But I, you know, like other custom guys, I try not to copy or, you know, I try to find my own place in a way. And a lot of the repairs that I do and restorations I do, I get to see all these really early banjos that not everybody gets the privilege to see and get their hands on. So I get measurements and sizes, and I base a lot of my designs off early designs, but kind of take a modern twist to them with my own style to it. And part of that comes from my father as well. You know, being a custom furniture maker, he's had to kind of fit in to a lot of different molds over the years. And seeing him work and seeing how he designs and how he works with clients and how he works with people to pull the design from them based on the pieces that they give him. And I've kind of emulated myself after that. You know, I get bits and pieces from the client I'm working with, put my own little twist on them and see what comes out, you know. And I'm still, I feel like in the last year and a half, 2 years or so, I've really found my, a style that fits me in a direction that I'm heading in.
Okay.
And just recently I've started selling my instruments with the Music Emporium in Lexington. And what I've sent to them and what I'm going to be sending to them in the future is going to be more what I want to do and what I see my style representing.
Yeah. And are any two alike, or do you try to mix it up with everyone?
I try to mix it up.
Yeah.
And lately I have had a couple of models, you could say, that are kind of heading in a solid direction of certain appointments. But the way I build, no two are going to be alike, because I do engraving work and some inlay work that really allows me to have some freedom of design. Yeah. And even though the inlay might be the same, the engraving will be different, or some of the details might be mixed together of the actual instrument, you know, size of the rim, size of the scale length, the heel shape, the peg head shape. It gives you a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I really love about the open back banjo.
Yeah.
Is when people think of an open back banjo that know the instrument a little bit, they don't really think of one instrument in particular, like you would a Gibson Master Tone when you think bluegrass banjo or resonator banjo.
Yeah.
Or flat top guitar, even. You know, there's a set design that a lot of people expect to see. And with an open back banjo, which people like Kevin and especially Jason and Ferris have really kind of blown open and said, you know, there's nothing you really can expect to see. You know, it's all over the place, and it allows for a lot of creative freedom.
Yeah, you have a much more open-minded clientele than a lot of luthiers out there.
Yeah, and I do feel fortunate with that. And sometimes you have to kind of steer those people in the right direction and help them kind of decide, as with any luthier would have to do.
What kind of woods do you use?
I use actually a lot like guitar makers would use, a lot of mahogany, walnut. But I use cherry and maple, curly maple a lot. And rosewood, ebony, and I use a lot of native wood too. I use a local Vermont hardwood ironwood or hophorn beam, which the late Will Fielding, who was another big influence on me, another Vermont banjo maker, he used to use a lot of that as well.
Yeah,
and it's a great tone wood and makes great fretboards as well.
Got it. And do you still do the rims the way you did that first one, or have you moved on to the steaming
method? Occasionally, but I mostly do the steam bent rims now, which I do all myself.
Yeah.
And I figured out a process for. And it's a challenge, but it's a lot of fun, and it really makes it worth it because I have the control over the final look and the final, you know, exactly what wood is going into it.
So for folks, myself included, I mean, I've seen the sides of a guitar getting bent on a hot pipe. What does steam bending a rim even look like, or what does it entail?
It's similar. There's some similarities to it. Yeah. Unlike a side bender where you just kind of slide the side in, a lot of guys use heat blankets now, so it's really a fast process. Bending parts for a banjo rim, usually the parts are a lot thicker, you know, up to 3/8 of an inch sometimes. Mm-hmm. So you have to build a big steam box. I use a big long PVC pipe that I pump a bunch of steam into, usually, you know, half hour to an hour or so you steam the parts. And then the similarity is you bend it around a round form with a big strap and just kind of let it hang out for
just
a while.
Like a belt and, almost?
Yeah, kind of a metal, you know, similar to a side bender, a guitar side bender where you have the metal spring steel that kind of helps bend the side around the form. you have a circular form with a big strap attached to it, and you just stick the straight piece of wood in between the strap and the form and just loop it right around. And if you have all your calculations right and all your steaming times set up right, you don't snap the piece of wood. It goes right around.
How many pieces have you snapped?
I've broken a lot of eggs, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's occasionally you still do. You know, wood is a real, it's even working my whole life with wood, you never really kind of know what to expect. You know, you can really, you can plan as much as you can, but sometimes that piece of wood just won't do what you want it to do.
Yeah. Did you get help on that first steam bend? Like,
yeah, and actually one of the things my father used to do a lot of when he first started out making custom furniture was made Windsor chairs, which is a certain type of chair, which most people I'm sure have seen. It has spindles for the back and a bent top rail that comes in and attaches to the seat and bends up, and the spindles go in between that.
Yeah.
So he did a lot of steam bending early on. Okay. So he had, when I first got started, I pulled out his old steam box and the way he used to do it, and then kind of modified it from there. And he had a few pointers here and there, but he said, really just break a lot of wood and you'll figure it out.
Yeah. But you're pretty much self-taught for all this stuff, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I got a lot of pointers. You know, I learned all my woodworking techniques from him, working for him, making furniture, and which I learned a lot. And that was a really solid foundation in woodworking. So unlike a lot of people, I approached it from a woodworking background, not a musician's background, which I had, but more of the woodworking.
Yeah.
But along the way, as I mentioned, Kevin Enoch and Pete Ross and as well as my good friend Richard Newman, he's been up in Rochester. He's been a big help, and Andy and Bob. You know, I've had help along the way, but the majority of my work is self-taught.
Has your dad built an instrument yet?
He helped out with the first banjo, and he's always talked about wanting to do a lap steel, which we're gonna
pretty easy in the scheme of things.
He's a huge fan of music, but he's never been a musician. So and many years before that, he almost finished a dulcimer, but didn't quite get there. But he loves seeing what I do.
Yeah. And you use, obviously, this is like the rim stuff is super old world. Do you have CNCs?
I do. I use a CNC in my process,
And where in the process did that come along? Like, was that a recent purchase or?
It's actually, I work out of my father's shop still. So I have his whole amazing collection of tools to use. And as a furniture maker, I was learning to use the CNC. Okay. And with the early banjos, probably up until the teens or so, I didn't use the CNC for much. I did a lot of it by hand just to kind of get the feel for it and really figure it out. And that's one of the things I've learned about the CNC is that, you know, it's only as smart as you are. And if you don't understand the process you're trying to do with it first, you're not going to do that process as well with the CNC. You're just going to do it faster. You're just going to make so-so parts faster, you know? So I really wanted to understand how to do it by hand and then apply it to the CNC.
And what do you end up using the CNC for?
It's basically like a parts maker. I do all my fretboards with it. I do all the fret slotting, cut out the fretboards. I do inlaying and purl cutting on it. I do all the engraving I do by hand after that. And I cut out the peg head with it. I cut out truss rod slots. Sometimes I'll rough shape the neck.
Yeah.
Depending on the size, you know, if it's a size I have programmed and drawn already.
Yeah.
I'll do rim engraving. I'll sometimes cut some rim parts on it, you know, for those segmented rims or the wooden tone rings that are segmented. So I use it like a parts maker.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, nothing comes off the CNC and just gets sanded and finished. You know, there's still a lot of handwork in there, but it really helps me speed up a lot of the processes and keep my prices competitive and my work really consistent.
Did you study engraving, or are you just self-taught on that too?
That's where I met Kevin Enoch, actually. I took a week-long engraving class from him at Augusta in West Virginia.
Sure.
And he really, I had played around with it for 6-8 months or so before that and gotten an interest in it. But he really helped me kind of head in the right direction, taught me how to sharpen the tools, taught me what to look for, taught me some techniques and design you know, things to look at, things, yeah. you know, gave me books to read, gave me photos, gave me templates, and really just kind of pushed me in the right direction. And that really helped nice. Me out a lot early on.
Yeah. And what do you do? You mentioned wooden tone rings. Do you use metal ones too?
I do. Yeah.
And do you make those?
I don't. That's one thing I have not quite ventured into yet is making all of the hardware. Yeah. I do. My brother's actually a metal worker.
Okay.
So right next to the wood shop is his metal shop where I do some metal work. I make my own tension hoops.
Okay.
I make, you know, missing parts for old reproductions, you know, nut here and there, little pieces here and there.
Yeah.
But as far as the bulk of my hardware, I get from Bill Ricard up in Canada right okay. now, or Patrick at Pisca Banjos, a few things here and there for
the
metal tone rings and the rest of the hardware, and as well as Brooks Maston, Brooks Banjos in okay. Portland, Oregon. Yeah,
learning about all sorts of
yeah.
new names.
yeah.
What do most customers order? Wooden or a metal tone ring?
Lately, I've done a lot of metal tone rings.
Yeah.
The Dobson is a really popular ring.
Okay.
As well as just a rolled brass tone ring, which is just a quarter-inch round brass rod in a circle. That's
yeah.
a really popular one. Tubaphones, White Ladies.
All right.
Yeah, pretty popular. But I still do the last banjo I just finished, which was a really fun one. Had a trickster theme. So there was Brer Rabbit on the peg head, a raven on the back of the peg head, a butterfly, and a nine-tailed fox, which is a really cool thing. But that had a big 12-inch rim with a Wenge tone ring.
Okay.
So that was a nice wooden tone ring.
Yeah. And do you have a sense? I mean, we talked about how open-back banjo players seem a little more open-minded to new innovation and everything. Do you have a sense of, you know, could you pigeonhole your customers, or are they all over the map?
They're all over the map.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. There's some that really, you know, like any luthier probably finds that there's some that really want to be involved in every little step of the way and every little detail and have really a really strong vision for what that's going to be and what it's going to end up looking like. And some people put a little more trust in me or just a little more flexibility and say, you know, what do you think it should have? What do we want to do with this? This part's really important to me, but the rest I could kind of leave up to you. And this is what I'm shooting. This is the sound I'm shooting for. This is the look I'm shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really kind of all over the map. And I've had people that are serious players that really play their instruments every day, play it with people, play it in groups. And I've had some people that are just kind of living room players,
yeah.
you know, that just want something that really speaks to them and has some personality to it.
Yeah.
So they're kind of all over the map.
How are they mostly finding you?
I think word of mouth
yeah.
and internet, my website.
Yeah.
And I've able to, you know, somewhat on purpose, I've kind of stayed under the radar the last 6 years, 7 years or so I've been doing this. Because from early on, I had, when I first started my business around 2010, I was doing it nights and weekends
okay.
after working for my father in the wood shop. So it was limited amount of time. And after about 3.5 years ago, I was finally able to take it full time and really start expanding the list of work that I could do.
Yeah.
And since then, I've been fortunate enough to just stay busier than I can imagine and not really have to dig for work or look for work. It's just kind of come to me.
It's great.
Yeah.
Are you back ordered?
Yeah. I'm about a year and a half for builds right now.
Wow.
And I'm not taking on new repairs or restorations as of right now. And I'm about to, for the last 6 months or so, my list has been closed actually completely, just while I kind of got caught up and figured out what direction exactly to go into. And this new deal with the Music Emporium and a new website that should be up this
yeah.
week, hopefully.
Good.
I'm going to kind of reopen my list and see what comes.
Yeah. And what do they approximately start at?
$2,200 right now. I just put a price, just up my prices a little bit with this new website and with the Music Emporium banjos coming out. And but I wanted to keep them, you know, for a custom instrument, something that is somewhat accessible, but a little higher than something you could just walk into a store and buy.
Yeah.
So, and that's something that the CNC, like I said, helps me do, is kind of stay a little competitive with the custom banjos.
Yeah. Is your dad going to throw you out of the shop if you get too many orders and bring employees and stuff?
That's one thing I've been really fortunate about. He's given me a little space to work in and part of the shop, and he's been incredibly supportive, and he just loves seeing what I do. And loves having me working in his shop. And it's really nice. It's interesting because it's a rare thing to find a whole family creating and building things together. You know, he's making his furniture, I'm making my instruments, my brother's doing his metalwork. And they do a lot of work together, and they pull me in and help out whenever I'm needed for little things here and there.
It's great. Yeah. American dream.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thanks so much for coming over.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right.
It's a blast.